towns and I think the pilots.
And a call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing. Now that Representative Rukavina is here, we can start. We don't quite have a quorum, but we're going to start with House File 2172, Representative McElfatrick. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. We're just a little short of quorum. Once we have that, I will move your bill.
All right. So you would like me to begin?
I would.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. I am here to speak to House File 2172, a bill addressing the Construction Code Fund. And there is an author's A1 amendment for this as well.
And once we have a quorum, I'll be happy to move that. But if you'd like to explain the bill, the fiscal impacts, and then what the amendment will do, hopefully by then we'll have enough people to take action.
Okay. All right. So this bill would remove the statutory requirement that removes $1.5 million from the Construction Code Fund each year. The account is funded by permits, money from the permits that are used for construction. The fund is used to support the cost of inspections and enforcement for our regulations. This is a dedicated fund, and we have been, for the past 4 years, removing $1.5 million each year from that. There was a surcharge added on to help compensate for the loss to the fund of $4.50 in addition to the 50 cents that had been charged initially. So that brings in about $1.3 million each year, still leaving us with a deficit to the fund. And this does impair the function of the Dolly to do the necessary inspections and enforcement. So this has been a problem for us. And so this bill then would remove the requirement, as I said, to transfer that $1.5 million into the general fund.
If I might interrupt. We do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Breinhart moves the minutes of April 20th and April 23rd.
You're in the minutes.
Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor of approving the minutes as distributed, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. I will move House File 2172 for consideration by the committee, and then we would also like to move the A1 amendment, if you'd like to then continue.
To the amendment, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment would change, as you can see, the fee, the surcharge, to $1 beginning 2015 rather than 2013. This would delay the transfer from the Construction Code Fund from the beginning of 2013 to 2015, and the change in the surcharge would be adjusted at that time as well. So that would mean that instead of the total of $5 per permit pulled, it would drop down to $1. So that's the purpose of that. So two parts to this, the bill and the amendment. It will eliminate the statutory transfer of $1.5 million per year from the Construction Code Fund to the General Fund, and it permanently changes the surcharge to $1 per permit to be deposited in the fund. So again, to just kind of recap, this is to support a fund that allows for the proper inspection in a timely manner and enforcement of our building codes. So this is, I look at this as a public safety issue, that we need to be making sure that our construction projects move forward in a timely manner, that they're not delayed because we can't get the inspections done, and make sure that the buildings are safe, well done, and the electrical wiring is certainly safe. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Breinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McElfatrick, sir. I wondered if you'd just briefly comment on the change of the effective date.
Yes.
Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Rather than going for an earlier implementation, setting it out to 2015 allows some time for looking at the change that this would have on impact to the general fund, because this is a change to what's coming into the general fund. Thank you.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I see on lines 1.14 through line 1.21 that you are using these funds also to put into a revolving loan fund for a meth lab. So can you please explain why you are doing that and the connection between a meth lab and a construction code fund?
Representative Champion, that was a one-time transfer that has passed. Are you on the amendment or the bill?
I was.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
on the bill on House File 2172, I believe that's what we're on.
Yes, here. I'm sorry. We were on the A1 amendment, but base bill, that is a 05. I don't even know. Maybe you just delete it. I don't know if we need to leave it there or not, but it's not part of her bill or her. She's not. She's not changing that, and that's already happened. But Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair, this Section 1 of the base bill amends 2007 session laws, and this transfer from the Construction Codes Fund was part of an arrangement in 2007. Lines 1.14 to 1.21 that Representative Champion is mentioning was also done in 2007, and that's a transfer that occurred in the 2007 session. It's basically it occurred then. It's not going to occur again, and the bill is not amending that. But the first part of that section is the transfer from the Construction Codes Fund that the bill does deal with. But the language in 1.14 to 1.21 is basically, doesn't matter at this point in time. That transfer has occurred and is done, and there's no money there anymore. So.
But it does illustrate the pervasive problem where we raise funds or put surcharges on similar to the fire safety account, and then we find all kinds of other ways to use the money.
Madam Chair.
Representative Carlson.
You and I were probably both on this committee when that was done, and I remember the discussion when they would discover these labs. The cost of cleanup was just huge, and sometimes there was no real property owner that was capable of doing that, and that was the purpose. I guess you might argue it was a bit of a stretch for this particular fund, but it was an issue that needed to be addressed relative to cleanup, because there would be soil pollution and the pollution within the buildings that had to be tore down, and there were just all kinds of issues in rural Minnesota in particular with those meth labs.
All right. Any additional questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that the A1 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Now, members, are there any additional questions on the bill as amended? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative McElfatrick, if we preserve these funds for only the construction code fund, keep them from going to the general fund, are we going to see an improvement in inspections and that sort of thing? I think that's part of the argument has been that by moving this money into the general fund, they haven't had the resources to do what they need to do. And one of the things they need to do is do a quicker job of dealing with permits and that sort of thing. Is that kind of one of the expected outcomes?
Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. It is my understanding that being somewhat insufficient in funds for the construction code in fund, that it has delayed inspections, that they've had difficulty getting them done in a timely manner, which if you're delaying a construction site, that has all kinds of ramifications. One of the things that has particularly concerned me, because of communication that I've had from folks in my district, is not being able to get electrical inspections done in a timely manner. And I think we all have a real understanding of the implications of that. It needs to be done. It needs to be done well. Thank you.
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, Representative Michael Factor, is this the same fund and group that would have brought us this sprinkler mandate on residential housing? Is that are these two connected, or is that a different group?
Representative,
are you familiar with what I'm referring to?
Representative McElfactor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I am familiar with that. And I wonder if maybe we could ask Mr. Straczynski to address that.
Certainly. Mr. Straczynski, if you want to step into the phone-a-friend role here and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Minnesota Electrical Association. I'm familiar with that issue. However, it's nothing to do with this particular bill. It's this bill was brought to you by the electrical contractors, NECA, IBEW, my association, Minnesota Electrical Contractors, as well as the low-voltage people and the alarm and communications people. All of us together collectively who are contractors all pay the permit fees that go into that fund. We brought the legislation forward. So I think BAM supports this bill. I'm very familiar with the Building Association as well.
Right, members, any?
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess the reason I asked the question, Mr. Straczynski, is I think we ought to be cautious, and sometimes we find the tail wagging the dog around here, and that might be an example of that type of an issue. And so I just, it gives me a little concern, but that's the type of stuff that just happens as we continue to give permanent funding to groups, and all of a sudden the legislature's a little more removed from final decisions, and Mr. Straczynski, is, you know, what has been done to also, I mean, perhaps are we inspecting too much at times? I mean, is there times you could streamline that, and maybe there has been things you could share with the committee? There's two reasons, inspections or more, that wouldn't happen in a timely manner. One is there's maybe not enough staff hours to get it done, but the other is maybe there hasn't been a review of efficiencies, and maybe we're inspecting too many things that could be streamlined. Anything done to that degree?
Mr. Straczynski.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, two things there. First of all, fire inspections are handled by a totally different entity, and so it's nothing to do with this construction code fund. That's the first point. The second point is, I think the agency has been streamlined as best they can. They've been doing an excellent job in automating permits and those kinds of things. This fund, however, also pays for enforcement, so when an electrical inspector finds somebody who's not doesn't have a license and performing electrical work, they turn them in, but there's no money really for enforcement to prosecute these people and what have you. I believe the agency's worked very hard with the industry in the last 2 years, certainly, to kind of come up with a lot of efficiencies to cut as many costs as possible, but unfortunately, this is just too much of a burden long-term to lift without this remedy that's proposed here. So I think we've looked at where you can cut out and services provided by the fund, but they've looked at it very hard, and we agreed with what they've come up with, and I think I speak for they're all nodding their head to everybody in the industry.
All right. Any additional questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 2172 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative McElfactor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
And we're still waiting for Representative Sanders, so Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that Senate File 201 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
All right, thank you.
And then, Madam Chair, I don't know if we want to have staff do this or if I should do this. I was just going to walk through the differences between the Senate file and the House file. just so that members of the committee understood it. Does staff want to do that, or I can just briefly explain it? I'll just explain it then. The Senate File 201, the way the Senate sent it over, is they expanded how the felony, the current felony statute could be applied so that it would actually result in more felonies being charged, whereas the House file creates a third option for the gross misdemeanor. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to move that the House language substitute be replaced, or the Senate language be substituted with the House language.
Representative Garofalo moves to insert the language of House File 68 onto Senate File 201. Any questions about that? So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So we now have the House language on the Senate bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to briefly cover the fiscal note. The fiscal note on this is a $4,000 cost. If you look on page 5 of the fiscal note, it assumes that 7 drivers will be charged with this offense. If members want underlying history or background on the legislation, I'm happy to talk about it. But again, the fiscal matters are this is a $4,000 cost.
All right, members, any questions? Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Garofalo, normally I take a dim view of adding penalties to the citizenry, as we got plenty of laws going on around here. But this is one case, I think, where we actually have an unintended consequence going on. And I think of a case in my constituency where there's only a misdemeanor or a felony, and prosecutors, I think, are loath to jump all the way to a felony if it's not called for. It seems to be an overreach. I think this is one penalty I could actually vote for because it might actually help justice be applied a little more smoothly and evenly where it's needed. So thank you for bringing it forward.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Garofalo. I know this goes beyond the scope of the Ways and Means Committee, but I just was reading the House language here, and I just quickly want to know, in here it says a person who drives, operates, or halts a vehicle anywhere in the state, carelessly or heedlessly, is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. Does that mean if I slam on my brakes to avoid hitting a rabbit or a squirrel crossing the road that I'm going to be guilty of a gross misdemeanor?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, first of all, you'll notice that this specific subdivision is only in the actions where careless actions result in the death of another individual. So in the event that a rabbit jumped in front of your car, that in and of itself would not be enough to charge up to a gross misdemeanor. However, again, the situation only applies in those situations of death. Individual facts, again, the problem we have right now is that there is very little discretion. We have a misdemeanor offense, so if someone goes out, they are careless, they end up killing another human being, and they're charged with the same offense as running over a street sign. That's what it is. The flip side to that is that to get to the felony standard, you have to prove, I believe the standard in statute is gross negligence, which is just a hair short of intent. And so this provision, what it does is it creates a third way of doing this so that when a person is negligent and their actions result in the death of another individual, that they have the prosecutors have the option of charging the gross misdemeanor. So in terms of hypotheticals or individual circumstances, I don't think that jumping or standing on your brakes because a rabbit's running in front of you would be negligent. But, of course, that would depend upon a lot of other facts of the story you haven't told me.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. So I apologize. I'm not familiar with this section of statutes. Is it defined in statute what is considered careless?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it's not in the bill. My recollection of, and I'm not a lawyer, but my recollection of careless is I believe it's defined in statute, yes. But I'll defer to staff on what that is.
All right. Any Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. Question also in line 1.10. You know, you just try and think to yourself, I think careless driving, that's a whole different category. Death is a whole different category. But my question is about, or is likely to endanger. How would you is likely to endanger? It's kind of like having to know ahead of time that this might do that. That might be hard, but...
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I believe this would apply the purpose for that language is with regards to a reasonable person test, but I would, again, I would defer to staff on the intent of that.
Representative Dreiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, last year there were some cases of parents running over their children. You know, some of the new cars are hard to see out the back window. And there was one mother I remember who left a child, or a child wandered out of the house. The father thought he was watching the child, but the child got out and was behind the car, and the mother backed over and killed her own child. And so then there's this push to have monitors in the car so people can see. Would that mother then be eligible, on top of killing her own child, to have a final listen and prison time potentially?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Dreiling, again, in that hypothetical, I don't believe so. I don't think that would meet a careless standard. In that situation, the question would be, was the mother even charged with the misdemeanor crime in that situation? And if they weren't, then clearly the gross misdemeanor would not apply.
Any additional questions? All right. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I renew my motion to have Senate File 201 as amended, recommended to pass, and refer to the General Register.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. No. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sanders.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Abler.
I'll move the bill.
Representative Abler moves Senate File 1653 for consideration by the committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, Representative Sanders, we have the Senate file, we have the House file language, and we also have a number of amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd prefer to work off of the House file.
All right. Representative Abler moves to delete the Senate language and insert the language of House File 2093, the second engrossment, onto Senate File 1653. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So now I have the House language in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a real brief overview. This bill deals with an issue that was determined by the Office of Legislative Auditor back in 2007 report, found that we have a major problem of worker misclassification in the state of Minnesota. There's been an attempt over the last several years to try and fix this issue when it comes to worker misclassification, independent contractors, and contractors working in construction. There was a program called the ICEC program that across the board has pretty much been deemed a failure. This bill is an attempt to kind of fix that problem. It ends the ICEC program and helps bolster some of the consumer protections by installing a pilot project where we are encouraging folks to register with the Department of Labor and Industry for the main purposes of making sure that people are properly insured, so that folks are paying their taxes, paying unemployment insurance, and paying workers' comp as they should be. Most folks are doing this properly, and they need to do nothing new or additional under this pilot project, which is sunset in this bill as well. We're here before you today because we have a couple issues with the fiscal notes that we will hopefully resolve to your satisfaction here. The first one, if you will, the first part of this, Madam Chair, Mr. Rakowski with the Department of Labor could speak to the part of the fiscal note that addresses their department.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, and I believe we're talking about the A-10 amendment. Is that correct?
Not yet, Madam Chair. Just basically, the Department of Labor said that they will eat the costs associated with them in the fiscal note. I just have Mr. Rakowski here to say that on the record.
Okay.
I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry, and we will eat the cost. No, the cost is fairly minor. It's just the IT people charge a certain amount in order to set up the registration form online. And the registration form is for those people, if I can just amplify what Representative Sanders said, is it's a two-year pilot project, and it's for those folks who aren't otherwise licensed or certified with the Department of Labor and Industry who are engaged in construction activity.
And Mr. Rakowski, are we using the same definition of construction activity that we used in the field program?
It's much more simplified, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair,
it's kind of self-reporting.
It's the intent, Madam Chair, of construction was those working on the structure of a building or a residence.
And I recognize that, and we had quite the go-around when the failed program was implemented about who would be in and who would be out of this program, and so that's why I'm curious if you're using the same definition that was set up for the other program, or you have a new definition.
Madam Chair, we're not using the old definition. You're right. That was quite lengthy and cumbersome for individuals. They had to supply all manner of paperwork to us. We're not asking them to do that at all.
Well, I'm not asking about the amount of paperwork. I'm asking what types of occupations would be subject to this pilot program. Representative McNamara and I participated in negotiation around the definition of who would be come under that program.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, it is addressed in the beginning part of the bill here. I haven't looked at it for a while.
In the meantime, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to comment on Mr. Radkowski's comments that the department would eat the $168,000 fiscal note. It seems to me I sat in that chair just a few weeks ago with a $146,000 fiscal note that seemed to give great angst to some of the other agencies. So if you'd like to go to work for some of the other agencies and say the same thing, Mr. Radkowski, I would have appreciated that very much, Madam Chair. That's just my comment.
Representative Beard, Madam Chair, let me correct the. I did not address the actual amount. The amount that Representative Beard's referring to has to do with the 2%, the repeal of the 2% withholding payroll tax that the Department of Revenue would see as lost revenue. That's the bulk of the fiscal note. Our section is more like. The cost that I was referring to, I believe, is about 43. No, that's revenues. Where's labor? Here it is.
16,000.
I'm not finding it, but it's a rather small amount. It's to develop the website, Mr. Beard.
I believe it's 43,000.
That's the Department of Revenue. Ours is even smaller than that, Madam Chair.
Mr. Rustinkowski, I've been told by Mr. Marks that it's 43,000.
Right.
I don't argue with Mr.
No,
Marks.
No, nor do I, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. Any additional questions? Representative Westrom.
So, Madam Chair, where's that money coming from?
Mr. Rakowski.
Representative Westrom, Madam Chair, one, the construction code fund would pay the IT folks who are, as you know, now part of the Office of Enterprise Technology.
And, Madam Chair,
Westrom.
I guess this is maybe for the author, Representative Sanders. This looks like we're just adding another license or paperwork file for small businesses to have to fill out. I thought we dealt with something like this with having people a few years ago just clearly delineate that they're a business and filing an LLC. Seems to me we're adding more paperwork here. Can you give me some comfort that that's not the case here?
Mr. Raskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Westrom. This is simply asking individuals to register, and they register online. It is less of a, I guess you could say, process than what is currently in law in the ICBC program and has been deemed pretty much a failure by everyone around. The issue of the LLCs, like you were talking about, is part of the issue and part of the problem, and something that the OLA mentioned in their report, in that to get around the ICEC program, folks were going underground and also becoming LLCs and not, you know, participating properly and registering properly. So this is a free... it's free to register. If you are not currently registered, if you are already registered, you don't need to do anything additional because of this legislation, but it is less of a process than what is currently in law. And again, this ends the ICEC program, and this bill also sunsets, which would require additional legislation after that point in time. We've requested reports in this legislation as well to make sure that whatever the legislature can agree to next is something that actually works. But we think that this is a good step to move in the right direction of satisfying the report from the legislative auditor and to also make sure that folks are participating in the system properly.
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrom.
We've got just a few more questions. So Representative Sanders, what is the penalty? You or Mr. Rakowski mentioned it's self-reporting. The party that doesn't know they're supposed to report, what's the penalty for not reporting, and who does this all affect?
Representative Sanders?
Madam Chair, if someone is not registered and they are found to have not been registered, the pilot project gives them, I believe it's 30 days to go back and register, and the penalties are waived. There is no penalty. The point of this is not to penalize anyone for... The point is not to penalize people. The point is to make sure that folks are properly abiding by the systems and the rule of law. There are some penalties if you go beyond that. But again, if your question was more to registration, which is what I thought I heard... the point is that if you register, you're good. If you're found to have not been registered, you have 30 days to register without any penalty.
Yeah. And who does it affect, the second part of the question? Somebody else, I think, earlier asked, and you said it structurally, if you're affecting the structure of a building, is that the only party? So if you're painting, if you're putting in new carpet, you're... landscaping, you're reciting things that are just cosmetic. Is that not who we're looking at?
Representative Sanders.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, it's my understanding in working with the department and working with the Builders Association that this affects individuals who are working on constructing a structure. So a building or, you know, a residence. And we worked quite a bit on language with the Builders Association as well on how to define, you know, an individual or a worker, and we used their language so that they would be satisfied in who was encapsulated in the definition of that.
Well, Madam Chair, last question.
Representative Westrom.
Representative Sanders, and I'd like to have a discussion with you offline probably more as well, but... tell me or give the committee comfort that in my area and your area, all of our areas, I would say we've got a lot of people that do handyman work. That means they go in and repaint somebody's house or touch up, or they fix a soffit or a fascia that's rotten away. Are they going to be able to still do that? A lot of them are semi-retired. It's a little bit of income for them, or they're farmers that have time in the winter to do this kind of work. And where I'm getting at is, but who are we going to ensnare in this registration? And I hope we're not going after those handymen that help out down the street, help out part-time, oftentimes throughout the year, for just little odd jobs, but it's certainly affecting a building or a structure, or when you repaint, or when you fix some fascia or soffits, or fix some rain gutters. Are they going to be affected by this? Or give us some comfort that that's not who is going to need to be applying here.
Representative Sanders.
Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, that's a great question. It's something that we actually discussed a lot with the builders, as well as with the Department of Labor and Industry. There is no handyman exemption here on this bill on purpose. We are not going after those individuals. I don't know if Mr. Rakowski could speak to that as well, but Mr. Durenberger with the department as well also stated in meetings, joint meetings with myself and the Builders Association, that at this time we are not interested in going after those folks, especially in this bill. And we'll continue to have that dialogue, because I do know that the builders have concerns kind of long term on how we go after all that. But no, we are not. We're not going after individuals that you know, are semi-retired, or you know, just looking to you know, do what you were talking about in your question. So, in this bill, that is not the intention. And I don't know if Mr. Rakowski can speak for Mr. Durenberger, but he agreed as well.
Well,
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, unfortunately, that didn't give me more comfort, Representative Sanders. Maybe it's something we need to talk about that needs to be looked. You can't say the bill doesn't intend to go after them, but we aren't going to give them an exemption. I think that's contrary to the bill and to getting it out of here. So I hope we can discuss that. Maybe we need an exemption.
Madam Chair,
a good amendment for the floor.
Representative Sanders.
Well, I'm sorry if I was unclear. My statement was intended to say that we are not going after the handyman exemption in this bill, so that their handymen are still allowed to operate out there as they would currently now. There's no language in this bill that would change that.
Representative West?
No.
You're finished? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Sanders, I've got a couple different questions. Isn't there a group like the Work Comp Advisory Task Force that works on these issues, and have they weighed in on this legislation?
Mr. Rakowski.
Representative McNamara, Madam Chair, the Advisory Council is aware of this issue, because it's going back 3 years ago, the legislature, when former speaker, my old boss, Commissioner Swigum, we had a two-year task force, and my recollection is we did report to the Advisory Council we were going forward with legislation last year. But this bill does not speak specifically to work comp. What we've been doing the last 4 years with the independent contractor exemption, when we found that people were out of compliance with the law, Charlie Durenberger's enforcement unit would share that. You know, we would share that with our work comp division, say these people are being treated as employees, and we'd also share that information with the Department of Revenue and the Department of Employment and Economic Development, because that was one of the other recommendations from the OLA, was that the three agencies weren't coordinating their enforcement efforts well enough, and that's not the case anymore. We're coordinating very well.
Madam Chair, I think wasn't there a group that looked at this issue? Maybe you thought I was referring to a formal. I thought at least maybe an informal group. This has been problematic, and it was a problem back in 07. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we're trying to, Representative Westrum, we should not go after the handyman. That's a great little niche that people have. But unfortunately, there are some folks that are operating as business people and using this independent contractor that are really hurting our small independent entrepreneurs who have legitimate business, pay workers' comp, pay unemployment, and buy liability insurance. And there's people running under the radar, sometimes with small crew of three or four people, bouncing from house to house, whatever trade they're in. That's not fair to people that are doing it the right way. And I was not real fond of what we did in 07, and I'm glad that you're trying to fix that. Removing the 2% is a step in the right direction, and I like that. But Representative Sanders, I think you're making this better. There's some are concerned that this is more restricted. I see you getting rid of a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mr. Rakowski, you just showed us more and more along Representative Beard's point of the fiscal no process. You've got to be kidding me. We get rid of all that junk that we put in there about making all the more work for you. Representative Sanders comes up with a bill to make it a little cleaner, a little better,
mm-hmm.
and you got a fiscal note that's going to cost money. I mean, that just people wonder why we question it around here. This is going to make it better. I know why you're supporting it. It's going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, members, I think this is, I'd like to dive in it more like Representative Restrum before it comes up on the floor. This is the right direction. But in the end, we do not want these people running under the radar. These are the ones that you end up with your homeowner's insurance trying to figure out if they're going to pay the bill because some guy came and did some work on your home, and I'm not going to pick individual trades. But if they do something that causes damage, you can end up having to pay out of your homeowners because this fly-by-night didn't have any insurance. And that's what we don't want. But this does this, I have one other question, sorry to just editorialize. Does this to stop this? We were requiring people to go form LLPs and LLCs just to get around this or to meet this registration or get around the registration. I'm trying to remember. Are we getting rid of that, making those people jump through that hoop of forming the LLP or the LLC so that, if I'm not mistaken, some folks had to go do that to meet this law? And then they still have to pay that fee. Two things. Are we now making some of them not form that? And is the fee that they had to pay still in there?
Mr. Rakowski or Representative Sanders?
You asked several questions. The fee for the independent contractor exemption certificate, all that is being repealed.
Good.
Anybody can go. One of the things we found out in 08 when the bill became effective, you may recall some of you have been around.
Nobody joined.
Commissioner Swigum had just started about six months earlier, and we had anticipated about 20-some thousand people filing for this exemption certificate. I think today we have, 4 years later, 2,000 people. Over at the Secretary of State's office in the first quarter of 08, you suddenly had thousands of people registering as limited liability corporations, as carpet layers and sheetrock, and all these other men. I mean, and we went to the Secretary of State and said, how much does this cost? And lo and behold, it was about the same, a little less than the independent contractor exemption certificate. The law at the time did give Charlie Durenberger's enforcement unit subpoena power, and he would bring back, their investigators would bring back boxes of these one-page registration forms as LLCs, and they were just sham. I mean, if Charlie was here, we could bring a whole box, and we're off the point of the fiscal note. That was your other question. If you remove the effective date of the 2% withholding repeal out a year, then that the bulk of that fiscal note would go away. That's the Department of Revenue's estimate on what that's their lost amount of revenue for this coming year. Because right now the effective date is June 30th, I believe.
All right, Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sanders or Mr. Rakowski, in previous committee meetings, were there any contractors, small business people that came to testify for or against your bill? I'm concerned that you haven't here. You must file this electronically. This application has to go through a website or some kind of a deal where you apply it. I know that we all need to get up to speed on that, but I'm just wondering what if anything was given for testimony regarding the concern of that or other concerns that contractors may have had regarding this bill.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, as I recall, I don't recall that being a point of testimony from any of the contractors that testified. Some of them had some broader concerns that we worked with. We had many meetings over this bill, but I don't remember that being a real point of contention for them, as I recall. But I do know that we worked, again, with the builders and the contractors to find the language that worked best for them, and I believe that we got to that point on that issue, and I don't recall any negative comments on that in committee.
Mr. Ruskowski.
Representative Anderson and members, to your point about filing, registering, or renewing your license electronically, the department started at what's called an e-Tracket electronic licensing and renewal system several months ago, and our assistant commissioner just told me a couple days ago they did a survey of those folks, and of the survey respondents, they think electronic is just the way to go. Like Representative Westrom said, I mean, it's less paperwork. I mean, these guys, their office is their kitchen table, right? And they're getting very sophisticated. They're working on computers, and they really love the fact that they can do things electronically. It's less hassle for them.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Representative Sanders, was there any, other than that, was there other concerns that the bill has now resolved as far as concerns by contractors or small business people?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, it's my understanding that the Builders Association is still supportive of the bill. The contractors no longer support the bill. They did testify in favor of the bill, or at least were neutral in the Senate. Nothing in our bill has changed since that time. However, we did take every single one of the provisions that they offered language for from the builders and the contractors that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Representative Westrom.
Well, Madam Chair, a few more questions. Representative Mr. Ruskowski, I guess, sorry, I just about demoted you. Mr. Ruskowski, tell me a little more about this. You gave us references the first year. There was 26,000 applications for the independent contractor license, and then it went down to about 2,000.
Representative Westrom, you'd
tell me more about that, and wouldn't it be logical it would go down once you have the first wave of people registering?
Representative, you misunderstood me a little bit. It was anticipated that about 20-some thousand were going to fill out this exemption certificate, when in reality, they went around the law and they went to the Secretary of State's office, and with all due respect to the Secretary of State's office, it wasn't you. And they were literally told by their so-called, you know, contractors, their so-called employers, you're not going to work for me. I'm not paying this 2% withholding. Go to the Secretary of State's office and file as a limited liability corporation. And that's where we saw the big spike. So we only ended up, the folks who actually abided by the law amounted to about 2,000 people. And they did have to renew it after 2 years. And again, that law is finally being repealed after 4 years.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Ruskowski, how many filed at the Secretary of State then that you allege were going around the law?
Representative Westrom, that was a sticking point because at the time Commissioner Swigum met with the Secretary of State and said, couldn't you at least identify them as being in the construction business? And they said, no, that would cost too much money to change our, you know, I think they mentioned about $1 million or something. So there really wasn't any way to identify what type of activity they were doing unless you kind of read the fine print. And find out that they were doing carpet laying and sheetrock and other manner of construction.
So, Madam
all,
Chair,
it, all it listed was their name.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rakowski, is it illegal in Minnesota to form an LLC and be a carpet layer? Isn't that a legitimate business in Minnesota?
Mr. Rakowski.
Representative Westrom, you're absolutely right. It's totally legitimate. But when you are being told by someone to go register and then to show up every day at 8 o'clock, those fall under the nine-factor test of whether you're the employee status or not under Minnesota Statute 181.
So, Mr. Rakowski,
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, what do you mean by that when you're being told? How do you you just got done telling us you couldn't identify them from the Secretary of State's office. How do you know they were being told if you couldn't identify who the businesses were that supposedly went around the law that you just said was legal in Minnesota?
Representative Westrom, the way we were able to find out was through the two investigators that worked for Charlie Durenberger. As I said earlier, they had subpoena power, and these folks had to turn over all manner of documents to us, and that's how we found out what kind of work they were doing.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Westrom, I think Commissioner Swiggum, what did he hire, 7 or 9 people to do this great program?
Correct, Madam Chair, and then he had to lay all but 2 off.
Well,
all right. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair and members, I hope... Madam Chair, I'm not sure if this bill is ready for prime time yet, to tell you the truth. So I don't know if there's consideration of maybe letting it lay over and try to work on some of this. But I think a handyman exemption certainly should be something we pursue. Because Representative McNamara, you talked about, you know, the guys that we're not after. But, you know, the crews are 3 or 4, or the crew are 1, they're largely constituents in my district and across the state. I'll share a discussion I had with one just a few months ago. He doesn't belong to the Contractors Association anymore. He can't afford it. And so they're not being represented, to Representative Anderson's question. They're just trying to make a living. And so those are the people that we haven't even heard from. But that's largely the constituents. We don't have, other than in the metro area where there's a few larger contractors, a lot of contractors are 3 or 4 big. That's as big as they get. And they're lucky if they can keep themselves busy right now, much less have employees. And so I just think there's problems here that we need to fix. But Mr. Rakowski, I'm wrestling with, when you say, what do you mean when you say go around the law by filing an LLC?
Mr. Rakowski.
through our investigations, we were found out, people had, these contractors told us that they would have a crew before they could come and work on their work site. They had to go and register with the Secretary of State's office in order to keep them from paying workers' comp, payroll taxes, and unemployment insurance. And then oftentimes, Representative, again, this was a compliance issue. We would tell them what the penalty was, but if they came into compliance and treated these people as employees, we waived the fines. And it was a fairly good program. It was just really, you know, with 2 investigators for the whole state, it was pretty hard to, you know, get to everybody. And to your point about this, the handyman, this was discussed in the task force. We absolutely are not going after the guy who's part-time and does odd jobs. So I want to assure you that that is not the case.
Then, Mr. Rakowski, why don't we put language in the bill that at least clarifies that? Because the only way you prove what you've just told me is for lawyers to ramp up, go to court, and bring this testimony to the court as evidence for the intent of the legislature. And so that's not a very good way to go about assuring that you're not going after a certain group of people.
Representative Westrom, I might agree with you, but this is a Ways and Means Committee. We're really here to kind of look at the fiscal note and the fiscal implications. I think there's many of us at this table that have concerns with this bill. We are not going to solve
them
in the Ways and Means Committee this morning. There was, I'm sure, discussion around this issue in the policy committees. Representative Sanders, I know, wants to get as much support for his bill as possible. I'm guessing that he'll be willing to talk to you about your concerns. But really, the Ways and Means Committee is not the place where we're going to rewrite the policy components.
Well, and I understand, Madam Chair, and I'll stand down. But, Madam Chair, to appropriate any money for this is a pretty big deal when $43,000 is going to cause potentially a lot more headache for a lot of my constituents and constituents across the state than $43,000. And so when Mr. Rakowski of the Department of Labor is saying that they've got these sham LLCs that are one-page documents, well, Madam Chair, Mr. Rakowski, let me inform you, anybody that files an LLC, it's a one-page document. So to come in here and tell the committee it's a sham is a bit of a sham in itself, because that's the form the Secretary of State has, and that's a good deal. I think Representative Kiffmeyer was part of streamlining that form. It used to be many pages, and the information that is provided to the Secretary of State has gotten more efficient, but that's what it is. It's a one-page Articles of Organization document that every LLC files.
I'm done, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. Representative Garofalo?
Nope, I'm done.
Mr. Rakowski, I have both the Senate and the House fiscal notes.
Yep.
Can you tell me what the difference is between the $15,000 Senate fiscal note and the $43,000 House file fiscal note? What's different about the amount?
The latter was on March 26th, and our fiscal people just got a lot more conservative, apparently.
Oh, that's a good one. The members, please take note of that reason.
Madam Chair, our Chief Financial Officer counts every penny in their copy machine. She always uses recycled and that's two-sided paper all the time. She counts every penny.
Well, and I suspect that this issue may go more towards Representative Kahn's assertion that what you really find out in a fiscal note is, do they want to do it or not? I think that probably has more to do with the going
Madam
from
Chair,
43
should,
to 15.
We should put that as a criteria into statute, that ought to be one of the questions that must be asked to every department on a fiscal note.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I would, having chaired the Finance Committee, totally agree with that perception.
Representative Sanders, you have there. I don't know if you have. There are two amendments in the packet. Are either of those yours, or does anybody want to claim them at this time?
Madam Chair, the A10 is an author's amendment.
All right, members. Representative Abler moves the A10 amendment. Would you like to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This deals with the rest of the big bulk of the fiscal note. It was the dealt with the Department of Revenue and the 2% withholding. As of now, we can't get around the cost of that, so we're going to delete that section for now and continue to work on that. It's good policy that we need to continue to work on. But we have to find a way to pay for it. So as of now, we'll move to delete that with the committee's blessing, and we'll continue to work on trying to find a way in the next biennium to make sure that that can happen.
All right. Committee members, any questions on the A10 amendment? Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, I just want to be clear on this, Representative Sanders. So we're going to keep the 2% fee tax, and can you just explain that a little bit more? What does that mean for the person that's going to have to file?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Current law that we're attempting to fix here, current law says that the contractor has to withhold 2% and turn that into the Department of Revenue being that it's kind of really their only tool to make sure that, you know, the subs of, and again, we're not talking normally about the general contractor independent. We're talking way down the line a lot of times, subs of subs of subs. This 2% withholding was something that was used in the current program to make sure that there was some tool that folks were actually playing by the rules and paying their employee and employer taxes. So that's current law. We are attempting to get rid of that. But again, we just couldn't get around the fiscal note as of this time.
And so, members, if the A-10 amendment is adopted, this cumbersome program continues.
So, Madam Chair, I think it's better in the bill without this amendment on it. Representative Sanders, but Mr. Rakowski, we've just done some awfully good magic with fiscal notes in the last half hour. perhaps we could just find a way that the department would work with this too. Is that fair enough?
Mr. Rakowski.
Representative Westrom, I've talked to the Department of Revenue about this. This is revenue that would otherwise be paid in. This is an estimation. When you're repealing the 2% withholding tax, it's simply tax they're not going to collect, and that's their estimation.
But remind me, didn't the sub have the ability to recoup the 2% if they proved that they were legit?
Madam Chair, you'd know better than I was not present at the creation of it was a coincidence that the year they, Senator Bach, I believe, was the tax chair at the time, put this 2% withholding tax in for these subs was the same year we passed the independent contractor exemption certificate. I have talked to Revenue, and they're neutral to, they support repealing it. It was in the Senate tax bill as an independent bill. And they supported the repeal of it then, is my understanding.
So if we adopt the A-10 amendment, this provision is still moving as part of the Senate tax bill. Is that correct?
In the Senate, in the companion bill to Representative Sanders, there's also the repeal of the 2% withholding. But I believe in early March, the bill was heard separately by Senator Peterson. So I can't.
All right.
I'm not sure how that.
All right, members. Any other questions on the A-10 amendment? Representative Lancheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was in another meeting. I apologize. I'm just trying to get up to speed here. Are we talking about when Representative Senator Bach and I tried to do this, working with the building trades and. And are we now doing a tax amendment to take that out of law? Is that what's...
No. Representative or Mr. Rakowski.
Madam Chair, I mean, I'm just trying to understand. I think there was, as I understand it, and I'd be a little concerned without the tax chair in the room and without the folks who had wanted this speaking to it, if we were going to do anything, I would just say my understanding is that it isn't really working how we thought. And I think that's broadly accepted. Can anyone tell us if, you know, labor is supporting what's going on in the room here now? Because the tax chair is not here, and just think should understand a little bit about this.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sanders.
This was heard in the tax committee for support. And, I mean, I can defer to the committee if there is the ability to pay for this. I can withdraw the amendment, but it's my understanding to alleviate the fiscal note as we did with the last bill that I had before this committee, and taking out the portion of the bill that cost some cash. I'm willing to withdraw if the committee has the funds, but otherwise, you know, this is a solution that I see.
All right. What I've told is the Senate has passed the tax change in both Senate File 1653, the tax bill, and in the Senate, Senate File 1653, which is this bill, and also in the Senate tax bill. Representative McNamara, I'm sorry, Representative Lynch.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think what I'm trying to say is I think maybe we should hear from Chair Davids. This did go to taxes, but now we're changing it in this committee. And I think it would give
bipartisanly some comfort if the tax chair supported the change. I mean, does anyone know that?
Madam Chair, well, this amendment leaves the current law as is. Yeah. The bill, the portion that went through taxes, repeals the 2% withholding.
Okay.
That's currently in the bill. This amendment, because that is the genesis for the fiscal note from the Department of Revenue, was my attempt to make sure that this bill could continue to move without costing our general fund cash. So if the committee deems that they have the resources and want to spend it here, I'm fine with that and can withdraw the amendment. If not, then this is the way that I see that the bill can continue to move and we continue to work on the issues.
Representative Viskin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And in defense of the tax chair who's not here, I think Representative Sanders said it exactly right. I know the tax chair, and he's a great guy, and he loves cutting taxes. So he supported the measure that's in the bill. All right, but if it's eliminated, we simply have current law.
Right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Lincheski, Labor does support this bill and always has.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, the 2% is not paid and lost. The 2% is a withholding to ensure that people are actually paying the tax that they're supposed to pay. The reason we have the fiscal note is because when they collect the 2%, some people didn't pay the tax that they owed, and that's why there's a negative fiscal note. If we don't withhold the 2%, some people who aren't paying the tax are going to get by without paying it. A lot of us don't like the fact that they have a 2% withholding to make sure that the people who aren't paying it pay it. The reality is if you're a legitimate business and doing what you're supposed to do, you have the hassle of the 2% being withheld and you got to go back and get it from your general. But that does help you as a legitimate business collect money from people who aren't paying the tax legitimately. I think it's a good idea, Representative Sanders. I would support your amendment because I think you need to have the discussion and get to the crux of it and bring both labor and business together and find out, because generally nobody's at the table supporting the illegitimate business, for lack of a better word, both labor and business. But the small handyman doesn't have a voice at the table except for Representative Westrum. So those people are the ones that need help. I mean that tongue-in-cheek, Representative Westrum. You've always been vocal support, and a lot of us support their efforts. But you're here lobbying for them, and but that's who we have to have an honest discussion. Well, what do you want to do? But I think it would be good to move this forward to the floor with your amendment at this point. And so I just want to say I support the memo.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm going to support the amendment, too. I appreciate the way Representative Sanders explained it, and I get that. I think it makes sense now, and I want to tell members as well, I've received a message that, in fact, yes, labor is strongly supporting the bill and the amendment. So I know that, you know, the understanding is people are going to continue to work this out. It was just trying to understand this without Chair Davids here. And as Representative Viskin said, Chair Davids supports it. So I think everyone's good in supporting the amendment. Appreciate it, Madam Chair.
Well, and I just, Representative McNamara, I think for the contractors that are having to do this, it's a really big pain. I mean, I can tell you, I've heard from at least a dozen of them. I mean, they don't keep bringing it up, but when it was implemented, they were like, "What is this? This is not the way to solve this problem." And we have all this additional book work, and it's not us that are creating the problem. So, there's no easy solution to this. So anyway, members, are there any additional questions on the A-10 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Abel renews his motion for the A-10 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
No. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. There is another amendment. It does not appear to be fiscal in nature. It has something to do with selling fireworks in retail establishments. Is that your amendment,
Madam Chair
Sanders?
Madam Chair, we will not be offering that amendment.
All right. And so, but was it yours that you provided to us originally, or is there somebody else in the committee that's
Sorry, Madam Chair. That was a potential author's amendment worked out amongst the departments, but we are holding off on that. We'll not be offering it this morning.
All right, members. Then I think we have the bill in the shape that the author would like. Are there any additional amendments? Are there any additional comments?
On the floor. Yeah, you
can have questions? Yeah, Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just before you vote, I did have a chance in the last couple of days to talk to several of the stakeholders, including labor, and they're supportive of the bill, and would just encourage support.
All right. Representative Abler renews his motion that Senate File 1653 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. No. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Members, we are going to go into recess at this time. There's a slight chance we might have to reconvene later today. We're leaving it open as an option given where we are at the point of the legislative session. I view it as a low probability, but as soon as that decision is made definitively, we'll get an email out to committee members and the public. So with that, the Ways and Committee is in recess. What's that?